I will open the Senate Committee on Rules for June 5th, 2009. I will be going through the agenda again like a Rules Committee normally does, jumping all over the place. So we're going to start off with... We are going to, first of all, carry over on the back. Okay. We're going to be carrying over House Bill 2344 to a future meeting. Okay. And now, first of all, we're going to open a public hearing on 2682B. Mr. Romain and Mr. Gardner, are you both here? While you come forward with the committee administrator, give a brief overview.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2682B directs Joint Legislative Interim Committee on Judiciary or other appropriate interim committee to take testimony on feasibility and advisability of reinstituting a commercial surety bail system in Oregon, describes six specific topics in which committee may solicit testimony, directs committee to invite participation in study by specified agencies and stakeholders, allows committee to make recommendations to the next regular or special session of the Legislative Assembly, declares emergency, takes effect July 1, 2009, comes to you from the House floor on a 46 with 3 no's and 11 excused.
Okay, Mr. Romain and Mr. Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, member of the committee. I'm Paul Romain. I'm an attorney in Portland, and I'm representing the American Bail Coalition. And 2682...
Please proceed.
Okay. 2682 is... basically a bill to study reintroduction of the private surety bail system in the state of Oregon. Right now, the state of Oregon has an extremely high failure to appear rate. In other words, people who are arrested on crimes and not showing up for the trial. The cost of the existing system is prohibitive, and you have no money to fund the existing system to make it actually work. So the thought is to re-look the idea of surety bail, bringing it back into the state of Oregon. And that's what this bill does. It's supported heavily by both the chair of the House Judiciary Committee and the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. They're anxious to do the work on this, and we would encourage you to pass it. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Gardner. I represent Aladdin Bail Bonds, which is the largest retail provider of commercial bail services in the United States. Does business in California, Washington, Idaho, all our surrounding states. Oregon is one of only four states in the nation that do not allow commercial bail, and I think that as a result of that, we've had some adverse impacts on our criminal justice system that hopefully this change could help remedy. The bill was the study version of the bill, which is what is before you, was carefully crafted to eliminate any fiscal impact.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Romain? You look like you wanted to address an issue.
Yeah, there was just one other thing I forgot to mention. There's a couple of interesting things that happen in Oregon by way of illustration. Oregon does not allow, in effect, a bail bondsman to operate. So if a person skips bail from Washington State or California, comes into Oregon, you can't pick that person up. A bail bondsman from another state cannot come in and pick that person up. So we literally have people here who are thumbing their nose at other states. In addition, it gets to the point of being absurd. If you pick somebody up in California and need to bring them up to Washington State, you cannot drive through the state of Oregon because you would be kidnapping the person if you brought him through the state of Oregon. So the whole idea is to look the system over and decide whether or not we want to change the existing system. Thank you.
Yes, questions?
Thank you. Gentlemen, I'm very conflicted on this because I'm very skeptical of task forces, just as a general rule. But I'm also a tremendous fan of Dog the Bounty Hunter. So, how can you reconcile those two issues,
Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, hard to reconcile dog with just about anything. The idea behind this isn't a normal task force. This is your interim judiciary committees looking at the system. It's not setting up a special...
I'm listening.
special task force to look at something.
It's the first bill.
I'm impressed. So from that standpoint, it's not bringing in a bunch of other experts. It's you all, the decision makers, basically having the time to look at it. You're reinstituting the system. The system has to be done right. That's your job. It's not setting up somebody outside of you to do this. It's you actually looking at this, your interim judiciary committee. We intentionally did it that way. We will bring in experts. We'll bring in experts on all sides of it to talk about it. One of the problems is Dog probably could not get licensed in the state of Oregon because Dog has felony convictions, and that would not be allowed. So there are ways to control the system. This actually, it's interesting. This all, the whole thing arose out of a Willamette Week article, of all things, that compared Washington State system with Oregon and found that Washington State was doing a heck of a lot better job, basically on failure to appear, and it was because of the bail system.
Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, I would just echo, I think this is precisely in keeping with your expressed concern about delegating the deliberative authority to essentially outside groups, that we structured this so that it is, in fact, testimony to the legislative group.
Thank you.
Any questions for the panel? Any further questions for the panel? Hearing and seeing none.
Thank you.
Any others here to testify on House Bill 2682B? No? Excuse me for just a moment.
This is where we wire Paladin San Francisco, right?
I don't know why I need a bill to tell it.
I guess that dates me.
Are you going to vote now, right now?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to go into work session. Let's close the public hearing, open the work session on House Bill 2682. The chair will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2682 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
The motion is to move House Bill 2682 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Atkinson.
I thought you were supposed to call for discussion.
Is there any discussion? I already had the discussion. Discussion?
This is for the record. Courtesy. I don't think you need a bill to tell an interim committee what to take up. Ginny gave me the look and asked me to be courteous, so I will be. And then, in a faint hope of meeting Dog the Bounty Hunter, I will vote yes.
The clerk now will call the roll.
Senator Atkinson.
Yes.
Senator Berger.
Aye.
Aye.
The chair votes no, and the motion passes. And we'll move on.
I love it when we run over you, Senator Ferriola.
Get Senator Devlin quick.
I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2084, please. The committee staff will give a brief overview of the measure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 2084A allows the Secretary of State to electronically send a renewal notice report concerning financing statements or effective financing statements for secured transaction or agricultural liens that are filed with Secretary. Secretary of State may provide renewal notice report to the secured party electronically when requested, and it specifies content of the report. We do have a dash A2 amendment, which requires the Secretary to provide the renewal report and adds to the renewal report notice a statement that to continue the financing statement or effective financing statement, the secured party must file a continuation statement or an initial financing statement. The bill comes to you from the House floor on a 58-02 vote.
Tim Martinez is here, and the Secretary of State's office is here.
Okay, I'd like to call forward the officers. Any officer from the Secretary of State's Corporate Division? Tom Roche. Roche, sorry about that.
That's okay.
Thank you. And Mr. Rush, go ahead and proceed. And Mr. Martinez, would you like to join the panel? Please do. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Ferrioli, members of the committee. My name is Tom Rausch. I'm the Commercial Registry Section Manager of the Corporation Division with the Secretary of State. I'm here to talk to you about House Bill 2084, and I'll keep my remarks brief. You have my written testimony there. The Corporation Division is responsible for filing public notices of debt under the UCC law, Chapter 79.
Thank you.
Under that law, we're required to mail renewal notice to the secured party, who is a creditor, for each UCC financing statement set to expire within the next 3 to 6 months. We proposed House Bill 2084 as a measure to respond to complaints we've gotten on this practice, recognized practices of the rest of the country, and to save money. And we've worked with stakeholders such as Mr. Martinez's organization and others to develop a proposal to create a voluntary system where secured parties can receive a report of upcoming lien expirations by email. This solution addresses the concerns of secured parties who don't want to receive the notices by mail that we're now giving them, which is increasingly expensive, as well as those who do want to get notice, while providing us a way to save money through elimination of postage expense and printing. A sample of the proposed report was mailed to the representatives of the Oregon Bar Association and the Oregon Bankers Association. They've agreed that the report that we've given out is superior than the present system. The Oregon Bar Association and the Oregon Bankers Association have requested a minor amendment to the current bill. You have that here before you in the dash A2s, I believe. Is that right? And it will provide a greater assurance that secured parties can continue to receive this report by changing the Secretary of State may do this, to they shall do this. We've agreed to that. And there's an additional language that tells secured parties, if they weren't understanding it before, to if you want to continue, they need to file a continuation statement with our office. So thank you for allowing my testimony. I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Questions? Mr. Martinez?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Tim Martinez here on behalf of the Oregon Bankers Association. I do want to thank the Secretary of State's office for working with us on this. This used to be done by postcard, and that was, you know, becoming a little antiquated considering where we're at today in technology. This will be done through email now. We were concerned that it was permissive. Our folks who primarily wear belts and suspenders like to have all the information they can gather, and this will continue this good program at no cost to the stakeholders. So we're completely in favor and support the amendments.
Okay. Questions for the panel? Any other persons here present wishing to testify on House Bill 2084? Hearing and seeing none, I'll close the public hearing and open the work session.
And Mr. Chair, we just received the dash A2 amendment today, so we've not been able to get back a fiscal or a revenue impact on the amendment. We can adopt the amendment, but we cannot move the bill today.
Okay, then, colleagues, pending the receipt of the fiscal, I think we'll hold the amendment, and then we'll take action when the appropriate documents arrive. So we'll close the work session. Okay, let's open a public hearing on House Bill 2518A, and the committee staff will give us a brief overview of the measure.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2518A comes to you from the House Bill on a 53-03 vote, and for the purposes of government ethics regulation, exempts from the definition of gift sums paid to public school employees who are expenses for accompanying students on educational trips, adds conference to category of meetings which public official can attend that is excluded from gift definition, adds program materials to list of materials, publications, and subscriptions excluded from the definition of gifts. It also removes domestic partner from definition of relative for purpose of disclosure of potential conflicts of interest, repeals provisions specifying penalties and procedures when a candidate or public official refuses to file a statement of economic interest, declares emergency, takes effect upon passage. You will find a dash A11 amendment, which deletes the receives less than 5% of its funding from for-profit organizations condition on the nonprofit organization when expenses paid by that nonprofit organization are considered not to be gifts, and the dash A12s, which resolves the conflict with Senate Bill 30 on the repeal of ORS 244.380. You have a no revenue on both of those amendments, but we do not have fiscal statements yet on those amendments. We sign if there's just no black and then just caps.
I'd like to bring forth Justin Black, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. And George
Okulich. Okay, we're going to close the public hearing and with the potential of reopening it. So we'll just recess the public hearing on House Bill 2518 until Ms. They're here. Okay, reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2518. Mr. Black, Mr. Okulich, we are taking testimony on House Bill 2518.
Thank you, Chair Ferrioli, members of the committee. My name is Justin Back. I'm from the Oregon Education Association. We have one small line in this bill to help us out of a dilemma that some of our members ran into. You know, we have a number of members that do the foreign travel with students. You know, they work with the German club, the French club, and other clubs to get a group of kids together and then go to a foreign country over the summer or possibly to D.C. We ran into some problems of contributions towards the trip, helping pay for the teachers' expenses to go on these trips. They do go on these trips unpaid, but they normally get their expenses paid for. So this bill will allow them to be reimbursed for their expenses while they go on these trips. I apologize. In the House committee, they had a number of our members come in and talk about their trips to foreign countries. Wasn't able to get them here today, so you just get me. But that is our small segment of that bill.
Questions? Yes, sir, go ahead, please.
Vice Chair Ferrioli, members of the committee, for the record, my name is George Okulich, here on behalf of the Nike School Innovation Fund. What I've given you is sort of our 2007, I believe, annual report. And so this is sort of a combination. The issue we had was sort of a problem between with Senate Bill 30 and House Bill 2518. And essentially, the Nike School Innovation Fund gave about $9 million to the Hillsboro, Beaverton, and Portland Public School districts to do sort of staff development, sort of work with the superintendents to see sort of what were sort of some of the, you know, sort of innovative ideas they have to do that. And after Senate Bill 10, we couldn't. We're told we could not do that any longer. So Senate Bill 258, or House Bill 2518, as well as Senate Bill 30, corrected that mistake. I'm here specifically today speaking to the A11 amendment. Basically what this does is create an emergency clause for the 5% funding piece in the 2518. And so that will basically allow us to continue these programs this summer and this fall rather than waiting until January of 2010.
Okay. Any questions? Or did both?
They both justified,
Mr. Chair. Any questions for the panel? Seeing none, thank you both
thank
for
you.
Being here today. Okay. We are at, this is 2518. Okay. I will close the public hearing, and we will be having a work session on this in the near future when we get a final amendment and we get the required fiscals and revenue statements.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm curious on the SMS on this bill. It says removes domestic partner from the definition of relative for purpose of disclosure of potential conflicts of interest. I'm interested to know, next time we hear this, just the thought behind that.
I will have someone here, actually, to explain that, actually.
Thank you.
Because I think it's an important issue. Okay. 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 On SB 628, it is up for a work session today. The chair is going to carry it over till Monday. There are parties potentially still in disagreement about this bill, but it's the intent of the chair to move it on Monday. So they need to be in agreement by Monday. Okay, I'm going to start public testimony on House Bill 2699. Do we have anyone signed up? And can the committee administrator give a brief overview?
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2699A expands the types of public works projects under prevailing wage rate law to include projects with a projected cost of at least $5 million, located in an enterprise zone, and consist of or is sited on property that the qualified business firm has received a property tax exemption. It sets the required fee paid by the enterprise zone sponsors to the Bureau of Labor and Industries at $5,000, and establishes the parameters for fee payment and receiving certified statements from contractors and subcontractors when the enterprise zone has multiple sponsors, establishes an emergency and is effective upon passage. You do have in your packet the -A12 amendments, which exempts property on or within an enterprise zone owned or controlled by a port, the -A13 amendments, which exempts property on or within an enterprise zone owned or controlled by a federally recognized Indian tribe. You will also have a fiscal statement on the House Bill 2699A version, and you will see a packet in there of letters received by your committee staff from various counties and city boards in opposition to the measure.
Okay. Okay. Shipwreck, can you come forward? And then I'm also going to call up simultaneously Ken Armstrong and Phil Donovan. And then we are calling in Representative Schaffler. Okay. Phil, can you hold off for a moment? And please go ahead.
Hello, Mr. Chair, members. Mike Schaffler, State Representative, House District 48, Happy Valley, Outer Southeast Portland. House Bill 2699 simply prevails jobs in enterprise zones over $5 million. These folks get substantial tax breaks and credits and things to do this. I think the least they can do is pay a good prevailing wage. Great bill, should pass or dry vote.
Shipwreck.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, I'm Bob Shipwreck, Executive Secretary of the Oregon Building Trades Council. I've handed out, or it's coming, a lot of stuff is written, so my comments will be rather brief today. The first thing I wanted to do, first of all, this bill did pass the Oregon House of Representatives with 38 aye votes. I thought I should just mention, just to tee this issue up, just a couple bits of history or facts on enterprise zones. There's currently 56 of them around the state, 47 are rural, 100 cities are sponsors, you have three ports, and 30 counties, and one Indian tribe has an enterprise zone. In the calendar year 2006-07, there was $1.3 billion worth of property exempted in enterprise zones in Oregon. Second issue enclosed in this bill is prevailing wage. Just to remind the committee, most of you have been around long enough to know the history of it, but Oregon's prevailing wage law was passed in 1959. It's designed to mirror the federal Davis-Bacon Act. It applies to public projects over $50,000. Last session, you folks voted for House Bill 2140 to allow certain public-private partnership projects to be covered by prevailing wage. In 1995, Oregon, through an act of the legislature, began surveying all non-residential contractors to establish what today's our labor economist, Art Ehr, says creates what he would call a market wage, which is reflected in Oregon's prevailing wage. It surveyed about 8,000 contractors per year in 14 different areas of the state. And that information from employment is given to the Bureau of Labor and Industries, and they publish this book. If you wish, you can look at and see what the rates are in your own districts. I wanted to talk about, there's a report that is untitled. It's this one here. This was put together for me by a man by the name of John Williams. He's a person we've employed for many years working on this issue and others relating to wages and employment around the state. I'm not going to read it, but if you would just take the time to just look at it, you'll see that many times in Oregon, you've had large construction projects, a paper machine, a powerhouse, large distribution facilities, things like that, where the person who intends to build those has brought in their own workforce, oftentimes from the south, undercutting the wages of the area local workers. Local workers spend about 95% of their paychecks locally, while these out-of-area workers spend about 50% of their paycheck in the local areas. There are additional costs to the local areas. Oftentimes, of course, these are in rural areas and put a burden on some of the social services, schools, and hospitals. There is a list here of some of the larger projects that have been where this problem has occurred. It doesn't happen every day, but as you can read the list, it happens more times than it should. And what prompted the bill, if I can summarize, is that during the interim, Gatorade Company, they're owned by Pepsi Company, was intending to build a Gatorade plant in Albany, Oregon. It was about a $300 million project. Their contractor of choice was from Jacksonville, Florida. I actually met with some representatives of the company, and he informed me we already knew their method of contracting because they had built projects in other parts of the country, and it was easy to find out what they did. And we were informed at that time that they really did not need the local workforce's services, that they intended to bring their subcontractors and workers in to do the project. This is a project with $70 million of public subsidies involved in it. The project eventually went away. They said the economy, I think, by that time there was a lot of political noise over the whole thing, and the project didn't go forward. But this is just in the that was just the latest thing. The city manager at that point, who was pretty embarrassed about the whole thing, suggested, in fact, this bill. And he says, if it was a statewide law to have prevailing wages on these projects, then the cities and counties wouldn't be competing against one another. So I took him up on that, and that's the bill in front of it. And I don't want to state in any manner that that individual is supporting or is opposing the bill, but I just wanted to share with you his thought. The next thing I handed out, again, I will not read it. It's an executive summary of a report that I just got. I did not have this on the House side. It's the policy shift to good jobs, cities, states, and counties attaching job quality standards to development subsidies. This was published in November of 2003. I'm told they've updated it, but it's very interesting reading, and I hope some of the folks representing cities and counties will take a look at it. I'll be happy to give them a copy. But as of in 2003, there were at least 116 state programs with standards. These would be wage standards. And 49 standards that apply to local subsidies, often covering multiple programs. At least 43 states, 41 cities, and 5 counties, a total of 89 jurisdictions, now attach job quality standards to at least one development subsidy. This is a net increase of 6 states, 16 cities, and 1 county since 2000, when the first report of this kind was made. Even more striking is the increase in the number of standards per state. The total number of state programs with standards jumped from 64 to 116 in only 3 years. you can look at this study, and virtually almost every state has some form of wage standard wherever there's public subsidies being done. An example of some of these subsidies include tax credit, training programs, industrial revenue bonds, loan programs, enterprise zones, and tax increment financing. So that report is a very interesting reading for you. The other thing that I found very interesting is that the people that put the report together also interviewed 119 people who actually put these projects, these subsidies together, the development people themselves. And most officials reported that there had been no problem, these are quotes, no problem, no reaction, or no complaints when asked how employers have reacted to wage standards. And it said a number of the officials reported that subsidies with standards have a positive impact on the region's development efforts. They describe standards as an important tool for targeting subsidies in ways that create high quality jobs, therefore avoiding the hidden taxpayer costs.
Mr. Shiprock, can
I'm going to close. Anyone that can run 8 miles with a flak jacket. That's a great story. This is a unique, it seems to us, the building trades be a unique problem in enterprise zones. You also have a lack of information. Some of these projects, like the Google project in the Dalles, was called O2, and people had to sign letters that said they wouldn't even talk about the project. So it's very difficult for the public to know these projects are even coming. Imagine a community where this could happen, a rural area where a large job occurs and people are brought in from out of state. In the building trades right now, our unemployment is 25% to 30%. Something like this would be devastating and exacerbate the current situation. I'd also remind the committee that last session, when you passed House Bill 2140, requiring prevailing wages on tax increment financing on commercial projects, I have yet to hear any complaints or peep regarding implementation of that act. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Shiprock. Any questions? Thank you, Representative Shoffman. Thank you, Mr. Shiprock. I'll bring up next Ken Armstrong and Phil Donovan. And given the number of people that are signed up, I'm going to ask people to limit their testimony to 3 minutes. Please identify yourself for the record and start at your leisure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Ken Armstrong, representing the Oregon Public Ports Association, Oregon's 23 public port districts. We are here to talk about the A-12 amendments, which effectively exempt projects that are on port properties from the bill. We've been working with Mr. Shiprock over the course of most of the session to try and figure out some way to get at the problem that that he and his members have, and at the same time, protecting things from the development side and in the program so that it works in a way that is in the best interest of all Oregonians. I'm not convinced that we ultimately can't get to a place where everybody's going to be able to come up with something that works. This is an important program. There's some important interests on the other side. So far, we just haven't been able to get there. One of the things that we had originally hoped we might be able to do is begin with a first source hiring agreement, and then failing that, have the prevailing wage kick in at that point. Unfortunately, in our conversations with Ledge Council and also with the AG's office, that Mr. Shiprock was very generous in helping coordinate, we just haven't been able to come up with language that gets there. So in the absence of working out some of those details, our feeling was, let's go ahead and ask for an exemption of port districts. As we've communicated to Mr. Shiprock, and he agrees, most large projects that are on port properties, in fact, are already prevailed, and so is not going to have an impact by the bill. When we have ports that are zone sponsors, either individually or co-sponsors, we think it doesn't make sense for ports to incur that cost, the fee that's associated with the bill. So we're prepared prepared to continue to have discussions through the interim and into next session to try and find ways to fix the issue, but in the absence of something more broad this session, we're asking you to adopt the A-12s. And I want to be very careful to explain that these are for properties that are within port districts, not any project within a port district. If that makes sense, that's an important distinction.
Mr. Donovan.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Phil Donovan here on behalf of the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation, respectfully requesting your favorable consideration of the -A13 amendment. This amendment would exempt tribal enterprise zones from the effect of House Bill 2699. And just a little bit of background, the Board of Trustees to the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla established the state's first tribal enterprise zone in 2002. Later that year, the Oregon Economic Community Development Department affirmed that decision. And just last year, in a joint venture with Accenture, we were able to open Cayuse Technologies, employing over 150 people, as well as opening up a DaVita dialysis. So our interest in this amendment can be summarized for two reasons. First, we hope to avoid confusion regarding the regulatory and jurisdictional authority between tribal governments and state of Oregon regarding wage and benefit rules. And second, the Confederated Tribes of Umatilla Tribal Enterprise Zone is located on reservation land, which the tribes lease rather than sell. Most of the buildings that will be built, that have been built and will be built in the future, are done with tribal financing and then leased to tenants. So this proposed legislation would impose prevailing wage rates on tribally financed projects. These higher costs would need to be passed on to businesses through higher lease rates and thereby negate the value of the enterprise zone. So we appreciate the proponents' willingness to support our requested amendment. Our thanks to Senator Farioli for having it drafted. That's all.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to call up Ken Armstrong, or no, I'm going to back Bill Fassing and Jack Isselman. And Jack, there's somebody you're bringing with you, but no one can make out what they said.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Jack Isselman here today on behalf of the Oregon Economic Development Association. We're an organization of over 200 economic development professionals throughout Oregon, many of whom work as zone managers in their communities. What I'm circulating to you now is a list of the enterprise zones throughout Oregon as they relate to the legislative districts. You'll see, Senator Farioli, you're the big winner. You have 10 zones in your district. Senator Atkinson, you have 7. Chair Devlin, I regret to report you have none, but there's always opportunity. By way of introduction, we share the goals of the proponents of 2699 who want to get more Oregonians employed in
construction. Can I back you up? I just have a little development called Bridgeport, so.
Oh, that's right. How could we forget? We certainly share the goals of the proponents of 2699. We want more construction in our enterprise zones, and we, in fact, submit to you, having Oregonians work in construction enterprise zones is part of the very rationale for the incentive itself. But we also submit to you that the amendments to the public contracting code that are contemplated by 2699 are not the way to achieve that goal. It's work. In fact, we believe it could work at cross purposes with the goal of getting more Oregonians employed in construction. And as the two gentlemen next to me will now explain to you, we're not here solely to voice opposition to House Bill 2699, but we believe there are some alternatives within the enterprise zone statute itself that could be developed. Mr. Armstrong spoke to them a moment ago that will help us better address the shared goal of getting more Oregonians employed in construction in enterprise zones. So with that, I'll turn it over to our two OEDA members with me today.
Chairman Devlin and members of the Senate Committee. My name is Ron Fox. I'm currently the Executive Director for Southern Oregon Regional Economic Development. Our district is the zone manager for four enterprise zones, two in the Jackson County area and two in the Justine County area, covering Medford, Grants Pass, Justine County, and Jackson County. I'm also currently president of the Oregon Economic Development Association, and I'm here today to really speak to you on what it on the important aspects of the Enterprise Zone program. Before moving to Southern Oregon, or moving back to Southern Oregon, I was the Business and Trade Development Manager for the Oregon Economic Development Department for almost 6 years. So Enterprise Zones have been part of my economic development missions for a long period of time. Enterprise zones are effective in creating jobs and stimulating business investment. For our communities in Southern Oregon, the zones represent our most effective tool at attracting new business investment, creating jobs, and putting Oregonians to work. As Jack mentioned, the association has been working with the proponents of 2699 throughout the session to find a solution that can effectively achieve the goals of putting more of Oregon's construction workers to work. Our proposal, as Mr. Armstrong mentioned in his presentation, would be to establish a program similar to the First Source Hiring Agreement that's been in place for enterprise zones for quite a long time. Our concept is that for enterprise zone applicant businesses, they would be presented with a list of certified and bonded contractors from an area reaching a radius of 100 miles, and their goal would be to consider the utilization of those contractors in their construction projects. But at the end of the day, I think the issue that's most concerning is the imposition of public works requirements on private business investments. This is a direction that I think has some serious ominous indications for Oregon, and I think will have a long-term impact on our ability to put Oregonians to work and continue the growth of the state's economy. I appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bill Fashing. I'm the Economic Development Coordinator for Hood River County. I'm a member of the Oregon Economic Development Association and a past member now several years back, luckily, so it's nice to still be involved. I'm here to present a few comments about this bill. The Hood River County Commission has recently sent a letter to Senator Metzger, and he's shaking his head, so hopefully he's gotten that, expressing their concern with this bill. And I would share what the people up here at the podium with me have said. But at this point, I think we have some fairly significant concerns that the legislation as it's written will stop or will take away the benefit and the value of the Enterprise Zone program. The goal of increasing wages, I think, is extremely important, and that's what we're in economic development for, and we're here to help create jobs and better jobs. But my big concern is the record-keeping element of this process. If we're going to require private businesses to track the contractors and subcontractors' wages, similar to local governments having to do that on community development block grants and other programs, I'm afraid we're going to run a lot of businesses out of the state, or at least have them not build in the state. The record keeping is just overwhelming in this type of proposal, and to ask private sector folks to do that and to follow deal with some of those headaches, I think would be overwhelming, and we're just not going to get them to do it and not make the investment in the state. In my mind, the bill would effectively eliminate the enterprise zone as an economic development tool in the state. With that, I'll stop, and I'm sure we'd be glad to answer any questions you all might have.
Okay. Any questions for the parties? Seeing none, thank you very much. Okay, I'm going to call up next, I believe it's Ray Bernstep from SEDCOR. Don't have to give all the where it's from, but Commissioner Bob Austin, and someone that we think is Mengelberg.
Thank you.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, my name is, for the record, my name is Ray Burstead. I'm the president of the Strategic Economic Development Corporation, charged with retention and expansion opportunities for local businesses in Marion and Polk County, as well as recruiting new industries to Marion County and Polk County. I also serve as a zone manager for the Salem Enterprise Zone. I have 23 years experience as a business person and 17 years experience as an economic development professional. In my opinion, if this becomes law, you'll ultimately eliminate the effectiveness of the enterprise zone system in Oregon, and it is basically the only tool we have at this time to recruit new business into this community. As an example, I have run the numbers with the project we're currently doing for Sanyo, an $84 million project that will employ 200 people at or above $50,000 a year a person once they're in production. An Oregon company is the primary contractor on that. Four companies from Salem, Oregon have a major portion of the HVAC, the plumbing, the electrical, and the steel for that project, all employing Oregonians, all in our enterprise zone. That project would not have happened had we not been able to offer them the enterprise zone incentive. Thank you.
Chair Devlin, committee members, I'm Bob Austin, Vice Chair of the Clackamas County Commission, and on behalf of the Commission and the County's Economic Development Commission, I'll be asking all of you to please oppose this this bill. And I'll try to give more of a local flavor. As a previous mayor of a small town, Estacada has an enterprise zone, as does another rural community of Mwala. Clackamas County also has a third one within the more urban part of the county, within the Milwaukee North Clackamas area. So being both urban and rural, we see this as a very useful tool, enterprise zones, that is, to help attract new industry and help existing industries grow. So in light of the time constraint, I'll be very brief. Our unemployment rate within the county is about 11.4%, and we've seen lots of job losses, curtailments, business closures. We feel that enacting this legislation will be a disincentive to firms to either come to our area or to expand. One of the examples I'll give will be one of our local businesses within the Enterprise Industrial Park. Eric Sales Northwest Technologies business has been cited in the Oregon Business Journal as one of the fastest growing small businesses in the state, fifth year in a row. So I think we may have lost that opportunity if we had something like this in place. So we feel that prevailing wage projects may negate the benefits and the incentive of the ability of existing companies to expand, particularly in parts of our county. We also believe that since recruitment is a very competitive type of a process, the county's enterprise zone program we think it's made the difference in bringing in a number of firms to Clackamas County. So we're really looking at this as a valuable tool and would love to really maintain it. We also believe, as a final point, that this bill burdens many of the enterprise zone sponsors, including the county, in cities like Milwaukee, Estacada, Mwala, with a $5,000 fee per eligible project. So again, we'd ask you respectfully to vote no on this particular bill. Thank you.
I'm Renata Mangelberg. I'm the Enterprise Zone Manager for the Milwaukee North Clackamas, Estacada, and Mwala Enterprise Zones. I'm here to support Commissioner Austin's comments. I've managed the zones for over 10 years now. It's been very effective in recruiting businesses and retaining businesses to Clackamas County. Overall, it's retained 2,300 jobs in our county, created 560 jobs, and spurred $35 million in investment. Clearly, it's an effective business retention and expansion tool. In general, we're supportive of providing opportunities for local contractors, but to require public contracting requirements on private sector negotiations is complex and burdensome and expensive and off-putting to the businesses that we're trying to attract and help them expand in our county. I echo Commissioner Austin's concern about how burdensome and complicated also it is, especially for enterprise zones that have multiple sponsors, to figure out the payment of the $5,000 for small rural communities, especially. That is a big expense to burden them with. Happy to answer any questions you have.
Okay. Questions from the committee? Senator Atkinson.
Thank you. I understand the go-no-go decision that happens to businesses that are trying to locate inside of a enterprise zone versus outside.
And if there's a construction element, then we're looking at a prevailing wage, and it's just, it probably won't pencil, especially on the smaller projects. So I get that. But what I, one of the things that was said that I just want some clarification on, if a project, if a business is located inside a zone and wants to expand, under this bill, the expansion of the building of property, would that expansion would be prevailed, correct?
Yes.
Correct.
And so I know that in the case in Southern Oregon and a few others, some of these places, some of the early push in the 1990s on enterprise zones had to do at airports. Airports were an economic, I don't want to say free trade zone, but is that right?
Foreign trade zone.
And thank you. And when we looked at that, we also looked at the location of some of those businesses at airports, right? And if that's the case, and now you have to prevail on those jobs that are the expansion at the airport, don't we get into a whole range of federal issues? I guess that's my question. Here's a case in point. At an airport, the ground underneath is usually owned by the county. The building on top is owned by a private enterprise. And now we're going to inflict, now we're going to state that they've got to be prevailed on. Is there any legal, what's the legal maze there? Or is there one?
Senator Hackison, I'm not sure, Chair Devlin. I can give you an example, though, of a recent expansion we had here in the Salem Enterprise Zone, and it was Garment Industries. We competed with another state for that expansion. That expansion included $14 million in capital investment and 100 new engineers for their facility. The only thing that brought that expansion to Salem, and it is located at the airport, the only thing that brought that to Salem, along with some money that we got from the governor's office from his Opportunity Fund, was the Enterprise Zone. That was their big decision maker for us to beat out the other state, was the fact that they could get the Enterprise Zone benefit here that they couldn't get there. So not sure I can answer your question regarding...
I'm not sure I asked my question very precisely, but I remember that there's a myriad of layers here that I haven't had explained to me whether or not this bill affects.
We didn't run into a problem with Garmin at the airport in Salem when we did...
Do they own the ground under the bill?
No, it's leased ground from the city of Salem.
Thank you.
Okay. Additional questions? I have a very basic question that any of you could answer. Enterprise Zone gives obviously significant tax benefits to the party that's in that zone. Obviously, there is the benefit of the business locating there in terms of the long-term employment. But what should our reaction be to major projects that come in and bring in lower-paid workers from out of state to do the project while we have people in construction trades unemployed or underemployed?
I'm not an expert in this, but I believe that it happens in potentially very large projects, but by and large, most of the enterprise zone projects in our county have been smaller, so they tend to go with local contractors more.
Okay. But if it was a very large project?
Chair Devlin and committee members, when we first meet with the client and the client asked to fill out an enterprise zone application, though we can't direct them that they have to hire local contractors to do their job, we certainly make that recommendation. And in the case of the large projects that we've done in our zone, that I've only been here 3.5 years, but all of our projects have been completed by local contractors. So I just don't see it as a huge problem for people bringing in, at least in our zones, for people bringing labor from outside the state to do our jobs.
Any additional? Yes, please.
And Chair Devlin, from my experience, too, within our local area, I haven't seen anything in terms of outside contractors coming in or out-of-state contractors. I think it's all been fairly localized in terms of the expansions. Some of the expansions have been pretty substantial. I think that Northwest Technologies started with 2 people in their garage, and they're now up to about 75. So they've had some large expansions over time.
Okay. Any additional questions? Thank you very much for coming here today. Next will be Ryan Tribbett and Joe Esmond. And committee, we'll have 4 more parties after that to testify.
Mr. Chair, Ryan was called by the Speaker of the House to have a meeting, okay. So I'll be giving
precedence.
I'm sorry?
And that might take precedence.
Depends, I guess. So I'll be speaking for him, too.
Okay. Please proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joe Esman. I am a business agent for the IBW Local 48, and today I'll be speaking for the union and the contractors. About 300 contractors in the state of Oregon, about 10,000 union members in the state of Oregon. With the IBW, we are 100% behind this bill. What Mr. Shiprock presented, he presented much better than I would be able to. And I want to remind the committee that it's $5 million of construction. And that is usually a big job. So we're not... There's no intent for these small expansions. There's no way. But having stood there on Route 30 in 2002 with about 200 folks saying, "Hire Oregon first" at the mill at Wana, and you see these tags coming in from out of state, kind of got my, you know, they had a local workforce. They would not hire the local workforce. So that's kind of, again, behind this bill. It's and that's all I'll say. That I'll be brief.
Okay. Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Penwell and Mr. Winkles. Or Ms. Penwell. And then the next two up after that and our final parties will be John Killen and Rick Thomas.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Doris Penwell, representing the Association of Oregon Counties. I just handed to you a letter from both the Association of Counties and the League of Oregon Cities in opposition to 2699. We participated on the House side on this bill, but had very little opportunity to influence any effects on the bill to make it possible to even operate the way we think it might be possible. We would love to have made some amendments to the bill to allow local hiring for construction workers as a requirement in enterprise zones for all projects, not just the larger ones. The reason you establish an enterprise zone in the first place is that local leaders decide that they want to incent the businesses from anywhere to locate in their area. And they are providing the incentive so that they can put investment in an area that might not otherwise have that investment. This is not businesses clamoring to us to locate in these areas. So this is a small incentive for allowing permanent investment and jobs in an enterprise zone. The enterprise zone is filled with requirements for how operations of a business will be handled, including wage levels, number of employees, increased if you expand and want the 4 to 5 year exemption. This bill would also add on top of it the requirement that the business be a public works project, even though the project itself is not a public facility, it's not sponsored by the public, and it's the bidding and the operations and the construction of those businesses are done on the specs of how the business needs to operate. So we believe that adding this further statewide mandate to something that could be done just as easily at the local level and is done in some cases is much more effective at the local level than the state level. The Enterprise Zone program allows local additional requirements, and they are used given certain circumstances in some of the enterprise zones. We have worked with some of the proponents on this bill to see if we could compromise something or make something effective for all of us, but the bill is a relating clause of prevailing wage. It's very difficult for us to fix this bill with what would really be effective, and that's requiring local hire or a preference for local hire in the enterprise zone for construction workers. Thanks.
Can
For the Scott, yeah, please proceed.
For the record, Scott Winkles representing the League of Oregon Cities. We share the concerns of the counties, but I will not reiterate the testimony you've already heard. Rather, I would simply choose to respond to the chair's question to the last panel, which, if I understand it correctly, was what should the reaction be to a public benefit being provided to a company and then them bringing in a outside workforce. And I think the reaction from the League of Oregon Cities would be, as this is a problem that should be avoided. And we would support the locals crafting a local hiring option that would address that issue. However, I am pained to point out that requiring that an E-Zone project pay prevailing wage doesn't fix the problem that your question describes. In point of fact, there was a major public improvement near the city of Medford, I believe it was a high school. It prevailed, and the contractor did, in fact, bring in an out-of-state workforce, predominantly out-of-state workforce, to do that construction. So, providing that this bill does not address that problem, but we do want to address that, and we believe local zone hiring is the appropriate way to do that.
Senator Atkinson has a question.
Doris, you actually brought up the question I had, and my question really is not with this bill because of the way it was written.
No.
I mean, there's a big push here for prevailing wage, and I understand
mm-hmm.
it. The only thing I'm concerned about is if the price in this economy is too high, and there's a go/no-go decision between our state and another state, we're going to lose it. Nobody works. Mm-hmm. That's really the policy. I guess it's a legal question for next time that we come back to on this bill. Can we, by law, put into statute regarding enterprise zones a requirement to hire local or interview three local firms? Or, I mean, I think I was gone a couple days this week, but I think we just did that on another case for hiring, putting in a hiring guidelines when it came to colleges and athletic coaches. I mean, if that's not illegal, can we not do that? Can we not force these companies, essentially, if you're going to take advantage of an enterprise zone, you have to hire in Oregon? Is that legal, or does that break some commerce clause I know nothing about?
Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, we believe there's a way to do this that doesn't create a problem with a federal commerce clause that excludes people from out of state from being hired on a local job. We worked with the proponents to see if we could craft something that, in fact, would do something like a local preference or a first source hire during the construction phase. It is absolutely something that everybody I've talked to in the counties, the cities, the businesses would very much like to support. But when we went to legislative council to see if we could draft something in this bill, they said they couldn't pull enough of the right things in here to make it effective for the enterprise zone. And we clearly don't want to send businesses somewhere else. We want to keep them and bring them to the enterprise zone. We don't want to give on the one hand and take away on the other. And that's the only problem. Nobody is against the wage levels being higher for construction workers.
Did you want to respond?
Mr. Chairman, in the interest of time, I think Doris said it all.
Okay. Any additional questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Killen and Mr. Thomas.
Thank you, Chair Devlin. Afternoon, committee. I'll be as brief as possible. You seem to have a very good grasp of the bill. First, let me introduce myself back up for a second. John Killen with Associate Builders and Contractors and Independent Electrical Contractors. As I was saying, you have a great grasp of the bill. We're certainly standing in opposition because we don't see the tie between the local hiring and the prevailing wage. We don't think it's there. We think there is some language that can be found, and we actually have some suggestions we're working on with folks to try to get there. One of the One of the other things I wanted to bring up, the city manager of Albany was brought up, and I'd like to one-up that slightly. The former mayor of Albany now passed away, unfortunately, and I had many, many conversations on this subject about Gatorade, about prevailing wage, about issues like this, and I can assure you, if he were around today, he'd be standing right next to me in opposition to this bill. He wanted that plant in for the people of Albany to have long-term jobs and good-paying jobs. That was his interest. He wouldn't have minded if everybody, all the construction workers, made a good wage. That would be great. He'd love them to be local Albany contractors doing the work. But in the end, his goal was to get some long-paying jobs in there. With that, I'd defer to Mr. Thomas.
Mr. Thomas.
Yes, good afternoon, Chairman Devlin, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Rick Thomas, representing Associated Builder and Contractors and the Independent Electrical Contractors as well. These contractors are local, Oregon, Southwest Washington contractors, but maybe surprisingly oppose this bill. And that's the fact that we really don't see the connection, as Mr. Killen said, between the prevailing wage in this situation and local hire. Example that I think the city's started to bring up is South Medford High School. Approximately a $64 million construction project, over 10 times the threshold in this bill. It's a prevailing wage project, but it's being done by a Utah-based contractor. And it just kind of, I guess it illustrates the situation of prevailing wage doesn't mean local contractors. And so, as a result, you know, we would prefer to see something that actually creates some sort of incentive for hiring local contractors. As folks have mentioned, a lot of us have discussed some different options. It's our understanding there are about 20 states out there that have figured out some various ways to, you know, encourage local contractor hiring in some of these situations, whether it's first source hiring, whether it's, you know, tying parts of the enterprise zone to the level of local contractors that are used and whatnot. The challenge, I think, with this bill that's before us today is, since it is relating to prevailing wage, you know, we're limited in the ability to then jump and switch over and start talking about, you know, local contractor hiring under the belief that we just don't think prevailing wage is the way that gets us there. So with that, I'm open to any questions.
Any questions? Thank you both for coming here today. I'm going to close the public hearing on this bill, and we will come back to this bill sometime in the future.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Earlier in this legislative session, a constituent from Malheur County asked me the question, why don't we have the same local hiring requirements in our statutes as the state of Idaho has in their statutes. And my answer to that constituent was that I was under the impression that that would not be illegal under Oregon statute and perhaps under federal statute. The constituent actually sent me a copy of an Idaho state enactment that has a local hiring component in it. And I'd never seen it before, and I still do not know whether or not such a component comports with Oregon statute or federal law. I've seen the language in the Idaho statute, but that doesn't mean that it's effective in Oregon. And I would wonder if we could get that question answered when we uptake this for further consideration.
I think we can ask legislative counsel that question and get an answer back. The other thing, obviously, as is identified by a number of parties, that if that was the direction the committee would choose to go, not saying that they would, but it probably would not fit within the current relating clause.
Mr. Chairman, I agree. I just think it would be good to have the information for future use that it, in fact, does comport with the Oregon statutes or does not.
Okay.
It'd save us a lot of time later.
We will do that.
Thank you.
I'm now going to open a work session on SB 597. We have considered this bill before. We have a Dash 4 amendment. It's the intent of the chair today to move the amendment to the bill, but not to move the bill today. I will have to move the bill very soon next week for it to have any potential time for consideration. So I'm still hoping that parties can still maybe come to agreement, but barring that, I will have to make a decision on whether to move the bill early next week. So is there a, can you give a brief overview of the bill since it's been a while?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 597 was originally heard on March 13th. The measure requires members of governing body of certain non-governmental entities to file statements of economic interest with Oregon Government Ethics Commission, allows Secretary of State to audit records of funds collected through public purpose charge and paid to non-governmental entities. We have the -4 amendment, which specifies that the information to be included in a statement of economic interest submitted by a non-governmental entity. We have a no revenue impact on the amendment. We do not yet have a fiscal statement on the amendment. It is pending.
Okay. Do we have a motion on the -4?
Are we in work session, Mr. Chairman?
We are now.
Move the -4 amendment to Senate Bill 597.
Okay. The -4 amendments have been moved to 597. Is there any discussion, Senator Metzger? Did you have anything to say?
Yeah, well, just for clarity, the -4 basically conforms the SEI that we're requesting here for members of the Energy Trust to the new SEI requirements that we just passed in Senate Bill 30. Okay. Deletes the relatives, in other words.
And with that, we are still obviously awaiting also revenues and fiscal impact statements. I will close that work session.
Mr. Chair, I don't think you took a vote yet.
Oh, these shortcomings this late in the day. This is late in the day, this session, the way things are going. Okay. Let me open the work session. We did have a vote on the... Is that legal?
No, we have a motion.
We have a motion on
the question, Mr. Chair.
We have a motion on the floor for the -4 amendments. The question has been called. Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing none, motion passes. I will close the work session, and we will come back to this hopefully when I've had more caffeine.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I would move that we suspend the rules and reopen the hearing by which we considered the work session on House Bill 2682B.
Okay, it's been moved to suspend the rules and reopen the work session on 2682B to allow the chair to vote on the bill.
To my motion,
yes.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
To allow a member to vote, Mr.
To
Chair.
To allow a member to vote.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Is there any objection?
Reopen the work session.
No objection.
Motion passes.
Reopen the work session. The member, I vote aye. Okay, I'll close the work session, and obviously the motion still passed. With that, we are probably still going to have a very full agenda on Monday. We're going to try to complete the work of this committee by Friday of next week. We will probably be subject after that date to being called in at the request of the presiding officer, the president of the Senate, but we will try to complete everything that we need to be complete by Friday.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Relative to the agenda for next week?
Yes.
I believe on Wednesday evening there is a very important meeting of individuals who are height disadvantaged, and we certainly wouldn't want to go long and have that meeting disrupted, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I do not believe we will be meeting Wednesday evening. This committee is normally quite efficient.
I believe that's discrimination.
It possibly
this
is.
This committee is normally quite efficient, and we will conclude our business during a reasonable time period.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
With that, we are adjourned. Chair.